Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Welcome to the Longest Stride. Trey, I've been waiting a long time to say this. I'm kind of excited. But today, we're going rogue. We invited two members of the Rogue Runners executive team to chat with us about their crew. And I'm excited, especially to speak with them. Trey, I hope you are too. The reason why I'm excited, at one point, Rogue was my home. And, you know, I ran with two of our guests for quite some time. And it was probably one of the best experiences I had in my running career. We'll get into that, hopefully, if they let me share my experience. But we'll talk a little bit about kind of their community perspective, what they're doing in the community, how they started, their training philosophy, and all that great stuff. So without further ado, let's welcome Megan Hughes and Danielle O'Hanley to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having us.
You need an applause sound.
I know, right? It's like, you're like, yes. I know. You know what? This is great because we're able to see each other on the video. Prior to this, maybe a few months ago, there was no video. So you'd have to kind of listen for cues, but we're not able to show visual cues. So, you know, you get cut off or it's like, hey, is the person still there? But anyways, let's jump right into it. The very first thing we like to do with our guests is to get to know the person first. And let's do Megan. Just try to figure out what's your history like with running, or just describe yourself in a base term.
Yeah, so I started running about 8 years ago. I grew up as a competitive soccer player. And when I stopped playing soccer at the end of university, I needed something to kind of do with my time. I wanted to stay fit. So I'd always kind of been a runner in the sense that I, you know, played soccer, but I never ran for the sake of running. It's kind of funny looking back on it. Running was always seen as a punishment in the soccer world. Like, fitness was a punishment. If you were late for practice, you ran. And I never saw it as something I would do for fun. But I started running on my own when I graduated university back in 2013, and I've been on a running journey ever since.
I love when runners say, you know, oh, I used to play soccer, because we get this a lot, like soccer, and it's like, you know, I didn't know if I was a runner or something. It's like, you run probably more than you touch the ball. So like, you're a runner that happens to play soccer. I just love that. I mean, obviously that's not what it really is, but I just love when runners say that sometimes, because you probably do a lot of running in soccer.
Oh yeah. Like, before GPS watches, they would put those old pedometer things on us, and I played in the middle of the field, and I would cover about 10 kilometers a game. And we thought that that was crazy. Whereas if you had asked me to go run for 10 kilometers as like a high school or university student, I would have like cried. I would have thought it was insane. But yeah, I was covering about 10K in a game. And I think on average, they say that the person that touches the ball the most in a 90-minute game has the ball at their feet for like 3 minutes or something crazy like that. Yeah.
That's interesting, because soccer is a lot of sprinting. So the approach is like you're actually doing a workout, you know, similar to if you were to do a workout in running itself. And then Danielle?
Yeah. So I have not always been a runner. I had parental figures and family and friends try and get me into running for most of my childhood and through university. But I never really took to it. I had some chronic back pain from doing gymnastics as a kid. So it was just very painful whenever I tried to start running. So my sport growing up was really swimming. So I lifeguarded, I taught swimming lessons all through high school and university. And then in 2012, I actually started running with a run clinic at a local running store. And from there, I went from my first 10K to my first marathon in a calendar year, which I would really not recommend doing. And then I've been running ever since.
That's awesome. And Danielle, thanks for touching on kind of the running experience with like run crews and stuff like that. Because that's one of the things that I literally just thought about as we were talking, doing introductions, as, you know, you're both in a run crew now. So what was your run crew experience? So thank you, Danielle, for covering that question without us even having to ask it. Megan, we're going to come right back to you then. Like, before we get into Rogue, like, what was your experience with run crews?
Yeah. So for the first couple of years, I ran on my own, and I followed kind of the, you know, internet training plans. And similar to Danielle, and especially with my coaching hat on, you know, do as I say, not as I do, but I figured I would tackle a marathon right out of the gate. So in my first year running, I ran the Chili Half, and then around the Bay, and then the Good Life Marathon as my first marathon, as one does, because that makes complete sense.
Naturally.
So I ran the Good Life Marathon, and the first 20 kilometers or so were phenomenal. They were great. And I just absolutely fell apart in the back half. And honestly, it wasn't from a lack of what I thought was training. Like, I really did follow a plan off the internet to a T. I did all my long runs and what kind of thing, but something was missing. And so I did it again, and I tried a different plan, similar mileage, I think. I don't know. I don't think I was counting mileage, similar mileage. And then I ran the Hamilton Marathon that following fall. And once again, it was a disaster. Like, up to about 32K, I was doing really well. And as we know, the race really starts in a marathon at 32K. And I just absolutely fell apart again, like hit a wall completely. Fueling was off. There were things that were just wrong. And it was actually my mom who said to me, she said, you know, like, I don't think it's supposed to be that hard at the end. Like, I think it's supposed to be hard, but I don't think it's supposed to be that bad. Like, I don't think you should be slowing to a walk. Like, it shouldn't be that bad. So she suggested I look up like a local running room and see if I could get someone to coach me. So I was in the Hyde Park area, and I wandered in and I chatted with the person working at the store at the time, who introduced me to Colin, who is the head coach of the Rogue Runners. And Colin was coaching the marathon clinic through the running room. So I chatted with him a little bit about how the clinics worked, how the runs worked. And so I actually started at the running room. That was where I kind of got my start from a run crew experience. And, you know, I'm sure we'll chat about it in a little bit, but that's kind of how the Rogue Runners was formed, was through the running room. So I went from running room to Rogue Runners, and that nothing in between.
You know, neither of you are letting us ask you any questions.
It feels sorry.
Like you just... No, it's
oh no, don't say that.
I am so kidding. I'm so kidding. I am so kidding.
No, it's perfect.
No, I just love no. I think it's perfect. And the reason why I joke about that, Megan, is I think the story of how Rogue Runner started is fascinating. And I think that's gonna be one of the next things that we ask you. And please, I am so kidding.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you do mention Colin, and the reason why I'm kind of laughing about this is because since I did run with you in the past, I do know some of his history, which is outstanding. So maybe Megan, since we have you now, maybe you could talk a little bit about kind of how Rogue started and kind of the, you know, running around Hyde Park.
Yeah. So it's kind of it's a funny story looking back on it. I guess I should caveat this. I don't know if this makes me sound better or worse, but I do have a PhD in exercise physiology. And so that's, you know, how I kind of ended up falling into this coaching realm of things. But early on in my running career, for whatever reason, there was this big block in my mind of like the practical application of some of the stuff that I was studying at a pretty, you know, cellular level. So I think if I really sat down and tried to figure out what I was doing wrong as a runner, I probably, you know, could have figured it out. But I think this idea of, I've always grown up with a coach and having someone to bounce ideas off of it, and someone that you just trust from an athletic standpoint to be that person of, like, you know, guidance and leadership. And I immediately really clicked with Colin because I felt like he had a really good balanced approach where running was super important, but it was also something we were doing for fun. At the end of the day, it's supposed to be fun, but if you've got big goals, he's going to help you chase big goals. And so in that first clinic that I did going into it, I actually was very nervous that, like, I, you know, was I going to be able to keep up? Was I going to be able to find people to run with? And it turned out that I fit in really, really well with one of the pace groups that was training together. So I went through this training cycle with them. And as a, you know, I've always been pretty competitive as a person. And so I was always kind of chasing the tail end of this pace group that I was running with. And I was always, you know, just able to keep up, but it was definitely a little bit harder for me than it was for them. And so when it came to race day, I figured I wasn't going to run with them. I was going to let them go, and, you know, we would see what happened. And somewhere around the half marathon mark of the, I swear there's a point to this story. It's a roundabout way to get there, but there's a point. So yeah, so about the half marathon mark of Good Life, I passed two of the guys that I've been training with, and both of them honestly looked a little bit surprised to see me. And I kind of started running with them. And one of them said, like, you've got legs, like you're slowing down to stay with us, go ahead. And what he said was, you know, if you get stuck, we'll pick you up kind of as we're coming. So it felt like I had this nice safety blanket where, like, I wasn't on my own. I had, you know, teammates around me that were going to be there if, you know, things fell apart. But I felt so, so good. So I'm running down Lakeshore on the out and back part of Good Life, and I see Colin, who's out there cheering. And you can see him. I can see him in kind of the distance. And he's looking at his watch, and he's looking up at me, and then I see him talking to someone, and it turns out he's having a conversation, being like, did we miss Stu and John? Like, they should have come through. And then he's looking, and he's trying to figure it out, and I don't actually remember this, but apparently I ran past them, and I said, I'm going to qualify for Boston. And I was as confused as they were standing there, and Colin's looking at his watch, so I go out, and I continue on this out and back, And I guess while I was gone, Colin was in jeans and like a button-up shirt and street shoes. So he was like lacing up his shoes because he figured when I came back, if I was dying, he was going to jump in and like trying to drag me to the finish. Because he's like, she's not losing this now. Like, she's got a decent buffer. She's going to be fine. And it was like, to this day, it is that in my mind, that one race that absolutely clicked. Like, I've never raced that well, but I did not go in with these expectations. It just kind of happened. So anyway, so I circle back, I follow through, I end up qualifying for Boston by a reasonable buffer, which like no one was expecting on the day. So all of a sudden, yeah, I'm going to Boston in the spring. And because of the way the running room clinics work, my season started earlier, my training would have started earlier. So Colin took me on and started coaching me privately. So I was his first runner that he kind of, you know, started coaching privately for Boston. And all of a sudden I'm doing workouts in the park with him. We like to joke, you know, I'm running in circles in the dark and there's this guy yelling at some girl by herself in the park, you know, run faster, you know, things like that. So we realized pretty early on that like it would be a lot more fun if I could have some teammates like I had at the running room, you know, supporting me, and Colin look a little bit less creepy if he had some other people around, you know, instead of just yelling at me. So yeah, so he then all of a sudden kind of said, I've always had this idea, but I've never really had the action to bring it to life or to make this happen. And he said, you know, I've always dreamed of being able to give back to the running community the way it gave to me as a kid growing up. And I'd really like to start this club. And so that kind of bridges to Danielle and the rest of our execs role. Colin started reaching out to some people that were big parts of the running room community. And we established this executive committee and it kind of took off from there.
For myself, it was funny because I think all of this was happening with Megan and Colin at the running room at a time when I'd actually stepped away from that group and was trying to figure out my own running. So I first started in 2012 with like the 10K running clinic at the running room, the same High Park location, met Jana, who is also part of the executive team. And I did my first marathon. I wanted to do more and I didn't really feel like the current programming at that clinic was really what I wanted. Like, I wanted to be running more. I wanted to be improving on my marathon times, and just what they offered at the time didn't quite fit that. So I kind of bounced around and I ran on my own. I dropped in with Parkdale for a couple runs. I ran with Amy at the very start of Night Terrors, ran with Run to Beer for a bit. Didn't really find any groups that really fit what I was looking for. And then kind of as that was all happening, Megan, Colin were kind of starting to form up this group. And then our kind of circles overlapped once again through Jana, who was our mutual friend. And that's kind of how we started kind of formalizing this group that would just meet in High Park every couple nights.
Yeah, it's interesting how even both of your start was, hey, I'm running, but let me don't follow a plan or anything like that. And if you did follow a plan, you had races, as you said, Danielle, earlier, that you had races in the same calendar, which you'll never do again. So not having even guidance or experience in, no, you're not supposed to do that. And it's interesting. I'm sure it's like advice to your younger self on what not to do. So I still find it incredible that you're able to just get back into it and then follow program, because you could count yourself out after, you know, doing such a massive like leap. I still don't know how those things translate, because you got it done. You were capable. But, you know, based on advice, you're not supposed to do something like that. But I'm still keen on how Daniel, the fact that swimming translate into, let me do this other, it's not even endurance, let me do running, you know what I mean? So it's interesting. You maybe just needed an outlet. And then, as you said, you kind of did the ringer to find out what would have been a best fit for you in terms of, you know, running journey, you know, maybe based on how exciting a crew is or how welcoming they are. I'm sure those were criteria too as well. So, but here you cross circles to then form a crew. What was that initial idea on what you wanted to define a crew as? Because you both had experience with the running room, like they're kind of like, you know, maybe they have a structure, maybe they don't. I've never been to a running room, but I wanted to know what would have made you different from the running room, let's say. What were those initial conversations?
I can start, and then Danielle, feel free to, you know, add in, change. So it kind of, so I guess we should give a little bit of background on Colin too. So Colin has grown up as a runner. He's been a lifelong runner. He ran through college, through university, and he always felt that a lot of his success to date as a runner, and you know, his ability to be involved in the sport and all of the capacities that he were due to coaches that looked out for him and coaches that gave him a chance and, you know, threw him a bone and really brought him along throughout his running career as a young kid. And so he feels like he has always wanted to have the opportunity to give back to the running community in the way that he benefited from it. He really thinks that a huge part of who he is today is because of his ability to run as a kid and the way he grew through that and some of the opportunities he was given. So Colin deserves all the credit in the world for the start of this club. It was his vision. It was his plan. It's been something he's been thinking about for a long time. And he, you know, he happened to pick a group of people who are also now really good friends, but we were able to kind of bring this plan to life and use the five of our different, you know, skill sets to create a really dynamic group. So for me, as much as we joked about, you know, I was running around a park by myself in the dark with Colin standing there. From my sports background, running was fun, but I was really missing that team environment. Running's so different in that it's, you know, it's an individualized sport. And so it doesn't have that same teamwork atmosphere, or I didn't think it did. And so I really was missing that kind of camaraderie of it. So I was looking for a group that, you know, I could grind through workouts with, that I could, that would motivate me to get out the door on some of those nights when you're really dragging your feet, people to kind of push you a little bit harder, that friendly competition. You know, my training partners and I are great for that. We love to, you know, little race to the end, at the end of each workout, push each other just a little bit harder, you know, try not to get dropped, but then, you know, celebrate at the end and be really happy for each other's successes. So for me, what I was looking for from a group and why Colin's initial, you know, idea really excited me was this idea of getting a team again. And it's something that I've tried to kind of carry through my coaching as well, that we really are a team at the end of the day. We may run different paces, but we're trying to, you know, foster a team environment and teamwork at our practices.
Yeah, and you're right. Colin does deserve a lot of credit for putting his vision and his plan into action. And I could say even kind of when I was there, it was absolutely extraordinary working with him, because when you say give back, like, that's an understatement. He cares so much about the athletes that he works with, and he genuinely wants everyone to do their best and succeed. And yeah, he's just an extraordinary individual. And, you know, he's no slouch on that 5K, 10K course. Like, he is remarkable out there. And, you know, if anyone, you know, maybe doesn't recognize the name, just look up so many of those, like, Sporting Life and other races, and he's up there, like, top three, top five runners in Toronto. I do want to mention something, and hope you'll indulge me, because this is something that I experienced when I was with Rogue Runners, and maybe you could tell me if this is, you know, something that still happens. You mentioned a few times, Megan, give back, give back, give back. And, like, let's clarify what that means, because I don't think a lot of people are really appreciating what you're saying. Rogue Runners started off as yourself and, you know, a few other friends, not so much, well, yeah, as a crew, because that's kind of the definition of a crew, more than one person coming out for a run. Like, two people could meet up in a park somewhere and they're automatically a crew. But there was more to it. There was a training element to it and coaching element to it. When you say give back, he didn't charge anyone to create these plans. He wanted his athletes to do the very best that they can do, but he wasn't looking for anything in return other than the outcome, right? And, you know, outcome's not guaranteed, but he was in this for his athletes to excel. What was that thought process, Megan? Like, I know when you sat down and said, we're going to do this, what was that initial thought process? Because there's a time commitment to do this. You have your life outside of running. You have your running life. You're now responsible for a few friends that are now athletes. What was that initial thought process of how he was going to start training people?
Yeah, so that's exactly how it started. And I think one of the big parts of this gig give back was Colin wanted to give other people the same opportunity that he had, you know, as a kid growing up. And so part of Colin's vision, and I think that's a big part of who we are at our core, is we do not charge for coaching. We will never charge for coaching, but we run on an energy exchange platform. So Colin and I, as coaches, we will provide, you know, custom training to whoever wants it, but there's an expectation of giving back to the community in some capacity each training cycle. And that's kind of that is your form of payment, is us being a community-based run club that's giving back to our community that we're a part of. So I'll let Danielle, she knows a lot more about the ins and outs of what we do from a community perspective, but that's still how we run today. That is one of our core values. That's never going to change as long as the Rogue Runners are here because we just think that part of our run community, you know, we need to be involved in the community and we need to be giving back in other ways. And so it's something that I'm really proud of and one of the reasons that I really enjoy coaching with Colin because it's something that I fundamentally believe in as well. So yeah, we love it. And, you know, it's, yes, we don't take monetary money, you know, we aren't paid in monetary form, but we are athletes pay in many other ways.
Yeah. And just to kind of top up on what Megan was saying, it's really, you know, the basis of the club as an energy exchange format is, you know, coming from Colin's vision, it's one to better our athletes and better our communities, but also it's with the goal of making it inclusive. So a lot of runners might not have the funds to pay for specialized coaching, and that might be a barrier for them. So by offering this exchange kind of format, we can make the sport more accessible for everyone, and regardless of, you know, what funds they have available. And then kind of when we look at the community initiatives that we run throughout the year, we really try to be mindful of giving people different ways of giving back. So it's not always fundraising money. Sometimes it's gear donations. Sometimes it's volunteering. So we really try to offer kind of a breadth of, you know, programming so people can give back in the ways that they are able to and feel most comfortable doing.
Yeah, I totally love that. I never heard that. Like,
Me neither. Yeah, I absolutely love that.
Like, wow. JG, I'm going to pay you in energy, so hold back.
Energy exchange is like the greatest concept I've ever heard.
Listen,
Trey.
Man.
Seriously.
It's not even
crypto. Is that trademarked?
It's not even crypto. It's like energy exchange. No.
It's brilliant.
Jokes aside, that is so amazing. I had no idea. This is like just one of the many ways of using run to then do good. You know, so, you know, we've talked about, oh, run and the PB and everything else, but this approaches from another end of the spectrum where it's about actually the structure of giving back. And then if you're so happy to get faster, that's a byproduct. And that's like, yeah, anyways, it's blown my mind. And I do want to ask Daniel, how did you get the group to grow that fast? I'm sure obviously as a team, but there must have been a thought process behind it. And how do you manage growth?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's funny because we talk a lot about, are we trying to get new runners? Are we recruiting people? When we're talking about ourselves, are we like marketing? And I think just good people draw good people, and we've really grown organically. So we haven't really done any outreach or like asked people to join us. It's really been word of mouth. And a lot of our runners also run with different run groups. So another kind of basis of our format is you don't need to join us. You don't need to be exclusive to the Rogue Runners if you want to run with us. All of our workouts kind of pre-COVID times are drop-in. So anyone can show up. We host structured workouts on Wednesdays and Fridays with long runs on Sundays. And really anyone can just drop in, but those workouts are typically structured to the training programs that Colin and Megan kind of govern for our runners. So yeah, so through kind of people dropping in, a lot of our runners run with like Run to Beer and some other groups in the neighborhood and in the city. It's really grown organically. And I think, Megan, correct me, but I think we've got 60-ish runners on plans typically these days.
Yeah, that's right. We, you know, there's a little bit of turnover each season, but somewhere between 60 and 70 runners on custom plans each season. And I think that, you know, Danielle's being humble there. I think that, so just for context, we have a 5-person exec. Colin is the head coach. I'm the assistant coach. And then we have Danielle, Gianna, who we've mentioned, and another executive member, Eve. And the three of them tackle all of the huge important parts that make us an actual run community, not just the X's and O's on paper that, you know, Colin and I take care of from a coaching perspective. And so they've put in a ton of time and energy as well. They've dedicated their time, you know, they're not being paid either. They're part of this energy exchange to make sure that we are, you know, growing organically, because we want to make sure that we're attracting good people and we're attracting people who kind of buy into our mandate. And that we also, I think Danielle's part of point about inclusivity is something that's super important, even just from a running perspective. We have people who are, you know, chasing 240 marathons, and then we have people who are trying to finish their first 10K, and we want to always make sure that we are making everyone that shows up to a run feel comfortable and to have people to run with. And, you know, inclusivity from a running perspective as coaches has been important, and I think that their ability to spread that message through various platforms and provide opportunities for people to get to know each other outside of running and that kind of thing. The three of them have been such a huge component to us becoming the community that we are. Like, I think that the Roadrunners really are an amazing community, and it's because of the work that they've done on the quote unquote non-running side of things.
I'm just like listening to this, and yes, I had some insight again, I'll say, to kind of, you know, how this worked, but it's just mind blowing that you have 60 to 70 runners on plan, custom for that matter. Who knows how many more running through that space, you know, maybe not on plans or just dropping in and stuff like that. You've created a community within a community. And what you've created is, it's extraordinary. And if you can like blueprint that, that should be like the boilerplate for like run crews in Toronto. And I know every run crew is completely different, and we do a lot of, you know, they all have a different need, but I'm just going to say the energy exchange, like, just the, cool. Like just the way you approach this, it's, there's no words. Like I can't even think of like the right word to even say here, but I'm just blown away by how the structure and how you work together and the executive team and how you're all supporting each other and the inclusivity and just looking out for each other. And that's, you know, that's kind of why you're so successful and why people are dropping in all the time. And yeah, I don't even think I have a question here. I just want to say, like, know, I'm so, right? Like, sure, I'm just blown away this, right? Because think about the scale of this, Trey. Like, this is like incredible.
Yeah.
Like, crews start all the time. Yeah. People start crews here and there. They're like, I'm going to get a few friends.
Yeah.
But how many crews? And there are a number. Like, you know, we know Parkdale, we know Cardio, we know all the other crews that are out there. A lot of them. We know Night Terrors has been out there for a while. There's so many. We can ramble off 100 crews. But how many of them can put together a framework like this that is community, the athlete, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I think you've all flipped it on its head because, interestingly enough, crews within Toronto, and I'm generalizing here, equate success to the number of people that comes out. And ultimately, it could be the approach of like, hey, we have fast people, but then that's not inclusive. Or, hey, we got cool tops, or we host great events. And none of those still kind of got down to the cause of good people wanting to do good, as you mentioned, and how it's attracting others. And it's the opposite way of just the other checkboxes that were meant to make your crew famous and popular because of the time of day and where you are. You just built it from the ground up. And in my experience, I see that Rogue Runners are the most organized crew in terms of just visually from outside. They are having execs. You know, crew have no execs. I'm just being, you know, straight up in that,
Jana
in that
will be
scenario.
Glad to hear that.
She'll be so happy. You just made her so happy.
No, but it's real though. It's structured. Like, just the idea of having that alone, because someone could grow out of running where, you know, I want to move on, but you could pass a mantle on or, you know, actually make someone enthusiastic about wanting to be part of a panel. But I've always think it should be like that because, you know, maybe you don't run in a crew forever. But if you have the structure there, you could carry the same experience for new runners and beyond. But not just the to your own or anything like that, but just even when you all come up with the printed stuff and supporting. So that alone made me seem like, oh, it's so organized, and everything is on the uptick for Rogue Runners so far.
Here's the best part: they have newsletters, so they actually.
I'm on that.
No, they have newsletters. Okay, and it's not just the like. There's layers. It's about. Yes, we're in a pandemic, but still finding ways to keep people engaged and going, even when you go through the newsletters, it's, you know, different ways you can stay motivated and ways that you could be engaged. And, you know, we might not be able to run together, but we're still family and we still got you and we're still going to see you through, whether it's virtual races or anything like that. So it doesn't stop for you. You're still kind of part of this thing and part of this community, your community, and it just keeps going. So, Trey, I think we might want to try to ask them a question. We're doing all the talking.
I know. But, you know, we're excited, but also we're learning because things are connecting dots now for me, right? Just in essence of knowing that different roles. So that's my question to both of you. In terms of executive team, can you describe some of the roles? Again, we're giving away a template here, but not to disclose too much about me. You may not want to share. But in reality, what are those roles there that makes this work?
I mean, I'm pausing because I feel like we should trademark this with what you and Jonathan are saying. To Colin's credit, when he first reached out to Megan, myself, Dana, and Eve, I think he really identified some of our core strengths and core passion areas and, you know, asked us if we would put our hands up and help him kind of build this thing that he had in mind. So Megan, as she mentioned, she's a coach on the team. So she and Colin develop all of our training programs for our athletes and manage that communication with them throughout the season. They also coach me. So I chat with them a lot about my own running. And then Eve's role is really on the community side. So she runs point on identifying what initiatives we might want to support. And we actually just recently introduced a community committee. So trying to get our runners more involved and having a voice in what organizations we're supporting. So she's been really doing a lot of work there to get more of our athletes involved and having them kind of help us organize those initiatives. And then for Jana, she does a lot of the branding. So she was the mastermind of our logo, where the O in Rogue is the upper loop of High Park, if you look on a map. And she does all of our apparel sourcing and really manages our overall kind of branding and website and kind of look and feel stuff. And then myself, I actually work in social media by day. So I kind of took on managing our Instagram and our Facebook group and Facebook page. And Jana and I work really kind of together on a lot of our external communications.
But you see why it's successful there. It's like the professionals with the profession and applying it to this. And that, yeah, that's experience, right? And it shows.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't just tap into like other runners to say, hey, can you do this? They took like, you know, they tapped into like their day jobs and things that make them successful to say, hey, why don't you help contribute to, you know, the success of this? And yeah, I think that's another kind of element to it that makes them so successful. And, you know, we joke, okay, executive team, but it's really a team of friends that are sharing the heavy lifting that's required to not only maintain this, but to do the plans and to the community outreach and make an impression on the environment and the community and the runners, right? That's required. And you need, you know, someone that's passionate about those things. That's not just coming out to say, listen, I want to qualify for Boston. Could you help me qualify for Boston? It's more to that. There's like, yes, giving back. So,
yes.
But Megan, I want to tap into coaching a little bit. So Colin, head coach, you said you're assistant coach. You both, I think, write most of the plans for the runners. So what's your philosophy when you're looking at the athletes? Like, what are you thinking about when writing these plans?
Yeah. So I think one of the, you know, upsides to COVID is, if there's some, you know, upsides, if we're looking for upsides here, Colin and I have actually been able to take a little bit more of a step back and really dive into a little bit more of what are people really looking to get out of from their running. And that's always kind of been the first question that we ask people when we're trying to come up with how to design a plan. And it's, are you all in? You're going to dedicate 100% of your life, your sleep, your nutrition, your drinking, your whatever, your late nights. Are you going to alter your whole lifestyle and be all in on a plan? Are you going to be, you know, that kind of, I think, everyday comfortable person who is all in on the training, but the rest of their life, you know, they're going to go for a run, do their run, and, you know, the rest of their life, they're going to kind of go about their life? Or are you someone who is running, you know, for stress relief and you want it to be a part of your lifestyle, but it's, you don't want it to be, you know, an added stress and an added pressure to it? So that's kind of the first thing we try to get out of, especially our new athletes, is to really understand what they're looking for. Like, what are your goals out of this? What are you trying to get out of this? Because that helps us to kind of come up with the basis of how we're going to approach a plan for them. So we do have two different types of plans that we provide. One is entirely custom, where every day of the week we're prescribing different runs, different workouts, different long runs, and we will alter. We always start with kind of a base plan each training cycle for each distance. Because when we do workouts, you know, in non-COVID times and hopefully post-COVID, it is nice to be able to work out with others. So we try to have the crux of a workout. Say that the workout on a Wednesday is kilometer repeats. Everyone training for that same distance will be doing kilometer repeats of some kind. But if you're on a custom plan, we're going to kind of customize how many reps you're doing. The rest might be different through them. And we alter it based on that, those kinds of things for people that are on the custom plan. So they will get kind of an individualized plan that's periodized, building to a specific goal race. And then we also are offering what we call stock plans. And these are more of your to completion. You want running to be part of your lifestyle, but you know, you don't maybe necessarily have massive time goals or you don't have as much running experience. And we try to integrate those from a base perspective as much as we can with the custom plans, but they're kind of for our newer runners who are either new to a distance or new to running completely and want something structured to follow, but maybe aren't ready or aren't going to benefit at this point in time, you know, from super customized things. Cause it, you know, when you're new to things or you're just trying to cover a distance for the first time, the number of K repeats you do isn't, you know, it's hugely beneficial. And so those are kind of our two buckets that they fall into, but the crux of it all is us understanding what people's goals are and, you know, wanting to understand people as human beings, because we've all got life stressors and we've all got other things on the go. People have kids, schedules need to be adapted. And so if we can really understand, like, you know, do you want the tough love and to be told, no, you got to get this run done, even though it's minus 30 and, you know, these kinds of things, or do you want balance? And that's kind of how we adjust plans on the fly with our runners.
That speaks to that same organizational skill, because you did create buckets that would allow anyone to want to be a part of it, regardless of their major goal. A new runner would assume they're like, hey, I just want to do a fast marathon. Is that cool? But not know what a time is to be a good marathoner. So being able to just like, here's the cookie cutter one. You just use that. And if you do well in that, then you could graduate. But I had no idea that it worked like that. And I know there are custom programs that every coach does right across the city and stuff like that. But you didn't just like send them an Excel and hopefully they do it. It's like, here's like what will probably work for you, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, it's kudos to just organize y'all. I'll take that on.
So a funny story on that, though, I do have to make fun of Colin a little bit. So when we started out, my first plan that Colin gave me was handwritten on a piece of paper on a grid where he drew boxes with a ruler. So he like drew 7 boxes across and, you know, 16 down, and he hand wrote all of them out. And when we first started doing this, when we hit a certain number and I said, okay, like I'd love to jump in on the coaching front, let's divide and conquer. My first thing was like, we need to automate this somehow. Like,
digitize it.
Cannot continue. At first we were just doing it in Excel and we were sending emails to runners. Then we moved to, it's been an evolution, guys. Then we moved to Google Sheets and we were sharing sheets. And this past training cycle, just these past 2 weeks, for the first time ever, the Rogue Runners had automated forms for training plan requests. We didn't have to, like, you know, take people's emails and text messages and Facebook messages and like toss them into documents. We used a form. We've come a long way.
That was Gianna's thing, right? She's about forms and spreadsheets, right? Is that Gianna?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's her. Now, if I go through my phone, through my favorites, I for sure have photos of pieces of paper Colin sent me with my training plan on it when he was still just writing things down.
I have a duotang of them. Like, my first Boston training plan is pages, pages. And then there were a couple weeks where I would, like, you know, either I needed a down week where we didn't have it, so it's scratched out and he's put in new numbers. And he used to, like, take photos with his phone and send them to us. So yeah, we're organized, but like we've come a long way. I got to tell you, we've come a long way.
Danielle, let's switch gears a little bit. So yeah, we're in a pandemic, and maybe it's not even a pandemic, but if you look at Instagram lately, it's almost not so many photos of people kind of running around. It's a lot of photos of community work. So virtual community cleanup and a toy drive and just a lot of things, cleaning up the parks and stuff like that. So maybe we could speak a little bit about the giving back in the community stuff. So it sounds like that was something that was from the very beginning, something you wanted to do. How has that evolved? Because I will say it's probably evolved, because I don't know anyone that does as much incredible community work. Again, it's not a competition, but you are. Rogue Runners is all over community. So what was that evolution like?
We had a lot of conversations about it, I think, over the summer as we were realizing that the pandemic was here to stay for longer than we first expected. And when we first were approaching our community initiatives, it was a lot of volunteering in person. So every year we would host our Hyde Park cleanup where the whole crew would come and we would go through Hyde Park and pick things up. We would volunteer at Team Unbreakable's races throughout the year and provide support with race kits and handing out food and stuff. And we realized this summer we really couldn't keep doing that, but we wanted to provide an opportunity for our members to give back, and especially in this time when, you know, the community is really in need. So we had some fundraising initiatives, and we've hosted a couple food drives and gear drives. And we most recently we hosted a gear drive for running gear, and we actually hosted it virtually. So we had no contact drop-off points around the west end of the city, whereas we had previously done meet us in Hyde Park and drop stuff off. And we really weren't sure how this kind of no contact drop-off was going to go, because, you know, it's over a longer period of time. There isn't that excitement of seeing people, which is very exciting these days. But it was really cool because we actually had Rogue Runners participating, like all our usual people, but we also had a bunch of other runners from the city get excited about it. And we kind of posted about it pretty last minute on Instagram. And we had a bunch of runners resharing it, and people reaching out to us through direct messages asking us, hey, is this still going on? And we just had hundreds of pairs of shoes by the end of the weekend of this gear drive. And we're just meeting such a great need for our community right now. And we're actually able to give a bunch of pairs of shoes to UHN, to some of their outpatients, which we didn't really expect would happen, but just kind of popped up as an opportunity during this gear drive. And yeah, I think we've just really been looking for ways that we can keep people engaged and give them an opportunity to give back, even if it's not in that group setting that we've traditionally offered to our runners.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I've always thought the same shoe drive, what would have been the outlet? My assumption off the bat that there wouldn't be any organization that accepts shoes or any athletic gear after the fact. But the fact that you are able to actually make connect the dot, as you said, UHN took it afterwards, and then it was their outpatient that would have needed shoes, I guess, eh?
Yeah, so we provided some shoes through to UHN. We also had a number of those donations go to Souls for Souls, which is, I know the Runners Academy also supports them throughout the year with a shoe drive in December. And they have drop-off points around the city, but they were accepting shoe donations. And then we actually had one of our newer runners who is from South Africa, heard about us early in the pandemic, moved to Canada, and then started running with us virtually. And she reached out and said, hey, there is my run club from South Africa. We actually source shoe donations for athletes in South Africa who don't have the funds to get shoes for their training. So can we send some of these to that group? So we actually are packaging these up, and this runner, Alina, is going to be bringing those to South Africa with her when we can travel again. So that fundraiser ended up supporting three different groups with very different needs, which was pretty cool.
That is awesome.
I love it. So Megan, let's cut over to you a little bit and bring you in. You look at some of the things, and this is on your webpage, so I kind of cheated and pulled it off your page, but Black Women in Motion, Daily Bread Food Bank, Parkdale Community Food Bank, Team Unbreakable, 519. I think a lot of us know, we talked about 519 in previous podcasts with Pride, and we're all familiar with some of the other great charities and organizations that I mentioned on the website. How did you go through the process to choose them?
Yeah, so I think our community person, Eve, she deserves a lot of credit for that. She's spent a lot of time chatting with people on the phone. She's done a lot of reaching out to different organizations. And I think one of the things that has always stayed important to us over the years is that we want to find charities and organizations that align with our ultimate goals and what we're trying to do as a club. And we want to find charities that we can ultimately be making a difference in. You know, we've talked to a few different organizations that are a lot bigger on scale, and a lot of times their needs are from a monetary perspective. And we find that as a small group, maybe the difference that we can make in that situation isn't as big or meaningful as it is to some of these more local organizations, where especially in non-COVID times, we can be doing things in person, like, you know, actually going and like helping in the different events and things that they need. And so Eve spends a lot of time talking to different organizations, and then she'll come back to the executive team with kind of pitches on what we would do for each organization, what our, you know, volunteering would look like, what we would be able to offer, and kind of big picture what those contributions would mean for that type of organization. And then we usually just kind of put it down to a vote, and people express their opinions and thoughts, and we go from there. The other thing that we've done, I think it started this year, Danielle, maybe a little bit before that, but we've also opened it up to the group and asked people if they had other organizations or ideas about who they would be passionate about supporting. Because again, if, you know, we are a community and we want people to be excited about the opportunities that we're providing them. So we've also opened it to, you know, suggestions from other individuals to see if they, you know, would like to contribute. But it's always kind of come down to like, where can we actually make a difference? Like, where can we make a tangible difference as a run club? You know, groups like Team Unbreakable just fit so well with what we're trying to do. They're, you know, doing great things for kids in the city from a running perspective. And we can make an actual individual difference by helping out at their events and whatnot. So that's one that I think we've had a long partnership with, and it just kind of fits under our vision really well.
Yeah, I would say we always try to, we have some pillars that we try to hit with the organizations that we support. So we, one pillar is mental health. So Team Unbreakable really fits that bill. We also look to support environmental initiatives. So the cleanup in Hyde Park is one example of that. We also worked with Don't Mess with the Dawn before the pandemic to do a cleanup in the East End with them. So we do travel east of Yonge. And then our third pillar is really, you know, community initiatives and underrepresented or underserved communities. So Parkdale Food Bank was a great example of that. And yeah, so really we look at, as Megan said, organizations where we can really make a local impact, but then also kind of hitting those three pillars so that we're having a range of things that we're also supporting and impacting.
Pillars is the word I was looking for. I could not think of it for the life of me there. I was like, what is it called that we use?
I know. That's so normal, though. It's like, it's right there.
Energy exchange rolls off your tongue, but pillars.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, Danielle, rescue me. What are those things called? Like, we have a whole document about it, and I couldn't come up with it.
I love it. I
like,
love
wave
it.
A pillow there. What I was saying is that, interestingly enough, the approach that you do take is actually with Eve reaching out to the charities, setting that clear expectation on what they would be looking for. The misconception is like when someone wants to donate to a charity that may not thought of what's necessary, may just want to put stuff at them. And then there's times when they're not accepting things, and there's times when they're in certain needs. So it's good to do your research first in order to make it align properly. And as you said, with the pillars that you align with, then to make that make sense, because that's the only way to have a successful charity and not have items on hand that they may not need. And it just becomes a surplus of something that weren't necessary in the first place. So I think that approach is really, really, really key.
Yeah, because, you know, as you said, Trey, like, we don't want to be burdening organizations with a ton of running shoes if they have nowhere to store them, or that's not what they're currently in need of. And food banks, they often need monetary donations because they can buy in bulk and get it more food and, you know, address the needs of the communities better than if they're, you know, we're gathering canned foods on their behalf. So Eve has done a really fantastic job of working with these organizations, really identifying how we can help them in an impactful way, and then bring that back to us so that we can organize and, you know, have these great community initiatives.
I want to segue, I mean, not to understate the incredible work you're doing in a community, but there's another part of kind of your values and your core mission, and it's actually part of your standards that you have in the website. You specifically call this out. You took this a step further. You have a whole inclusivity policy where you go through behaviors you're expecting of people and safety and modeling citizenship behavior. And the part I love is leaving only your footprints. I think that was like a Dave Matthews said that in one of his concerts. You even have an incident report on your website. You take this very seriously. So what does inclusivity mean to you, and why is this so important to Rogue Runners?
I think at our base, inclusivity has always been our core, right? From the energy exchange concept to having a really broad range of pace groups, as Megan mentioned. We really want to be welcoming for anyone. And we had some early versions of that inclusivity statement that we previously shared with our runners at the start of every training season. And then last summer, we, you know, as racial justice and social movements were really at the forefront, I think we all came together and we realized we need to take another look at this, because what's inclusive for us in our small bubble and in our privileged bubble maybe isn't addressing the needs of the wider community. And how can we be better? So we really put a lot of thought, and this was many meetings, many discussions around, you know, what wording do we need to ensure that we're accessible for people of all abilities? what wording do we need so that someone, you know, who knows nothing about us can show up and feel safe? And then also, what mechanisms do we have in place if, you know, they have a negative experience with one of our members, you know, at a gathering, before run, during run, whatever? How can we make sure that they feel safe and they feel comfortable reporting that so we can address it with our members? So yeah, we really take that very seriously, and we expect our members to abide by those standards. And as I mentioned, I think just because we've really formed ourselves around this giving back concept, and it has really brought out good people. So thankfully, we haven't had to use that reporting mechanism yet. We haven't really had to hold up that document to any of our members and say, you need to follow this. It really has continued, but we really did feel that it was important to have that codified somewhere so that we can refer to it. And, you know, we have a lot of runners who join our Facebook group 2 years before they start running with us. Like, people do a lot of research before they take that step to come out and run with a new group. So having that available and easily accessible for anyone who's even thinking of running with us was also a really important piece for us.
Yeah. And the thing that's important here is it's not just words on a website. You model that behavior yourself. So when people come to run with you, that's what they experience. So that's how they probably act. And that's probably how they carry themselves. So it's because I think you model that behavior. And I think that's what they see. And then they say, okay, this is a place for me. And I'm going to hopefully act the same way. So that, I think that's great how you approached it.
Yeah, it's pretty super awesome, because the guidelines would make it so that, you know, the right people are there, because you do see, you know, the fact that you could report an incident. It's like, oh, well, yeah, the idea there is someone can feel safer knowing that there's a way to, if they ever get a situation. And for not having, maybe I just had the running room as experience and no other crew stuff to create this, as Jonathan and I said, it's a template, because there are things here I never thought of, even though I don't have a crew, but just the energy thoughtfulness, exchange. The energy exchange, right? It's the energy exchange. But yeah, no, so just the things that was thought of ahead of time before even it became a problem is impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, it's, you know, we would hate to be in a situation where a member of our community needs assistance and we're scrambling because we've never experienced it before. We've never thought through how we would respond to it. So our hope is that by having this document and having that reporting mechanism, we're in a better place to support our members if that ever comes up.
Plan for the worst, hope for the best.
Super dope.
Exactly.
Yeah. Megan, what's next for Rogue? More coaches, more people? Well, okay, in-person running, I get it. But what's next for like the actual like executive team and the running crew?
So we actually talked about this pretty frequently, especially as we went through that kind of rapid growth that we already talked about. We're in such a good place right now that we would love to attract more good people, but we don't feel the need to actively recruit and, you know, actively expand. We want people to join us because they want to, and because we meet what they're looking for. And I think that from a coaching perspective, Colin and I have also evolved quite a bit over the, you know, the last 5-6 years. Like, our core coaching philosophy has stayed the same, but what's really fun for us now is, you know, someone like Danielle, we've been coaching her for six years now. And so we're getting to see her evolve as a runner, and we're getting to, you know, try different things with her and try different training approaches. And we have a bunch of those runners that, you know, maybe had big breakthroughs when they first joined us, and then the breakthroughs or the PBs got a little bit smaller because they were in that big space where gains weren't as big. But now we're in a spot where, okay, they're really comfortable with the way we coach and they've fully bought into our coaching philosophy. So let's try some different, you know, some different approaches. Let's mix things up from training cycles. And so I think we're in an awesome spot where we keep bringing in new members who seem to fit the mold really, really well. But we also have this amazing core that's been with us for the last few years. We've really bought in on all fronts. And so for Colin and I, it's so fun to be able to coach people that we know as both runners and people. And so what's next is, I think, to keep building that. You know, we got a lot of people chasing some big goals. We have so many people so excited to hopefully, you know, hit starting lines in the fall that we're going to kind of tackle it one season at a time and really just try and help people meet their goals and, you know, adapt on the fly as people's goals in life, you know, change as they progress. But yeah, we're having a lot of fun, and it's nice to have kind of this core group of people that have been around.
Yeah, I'll just say from my perspective, from the fun side of things, of non-running, well, kind of running, I think what I'm excited for with the Rogue Runners is getting back out and being able to run with people, and not only just the Rogue Runners, but running with other groups in the city. So we'd started doing a bit of that before the pandemic, but obviously weren't able to continue that over the past year and a half. And I feel like through Instagram, through Twitter, through Strava, there's so many great people doing good things in the city, and I really just want to run with them all. So hopefully we can do some more organizing with other run crews in the city once we get back to it in person.
Yeah, that one run we did, I guess it would have been last summer. It's not quite when the pandemic hit, but that run we did the four clubs, and we took turns going to the different run sites. Like, that was such an amazing thing. We each had, 150, 200 runners coming out to run. It was just so fun. Like, it was so nice to bring different groups together and meet other people. And I don't know, the Toronto run community is just so cool. Like, I don't think people that don't live here don't understand, like, how amazing our city is from a running perspective. They don't get, like, that this is a thing that we've got going.
It is dope.
It is dope. And one of the reasons why it's dope is Rogue Runners.
Yep.
Yeah, like what you guys are doing, like, we have so much love for Rogue Runners and what you're doing and for the community, for the athletes and everything else. So yeah, like, you're a huge part of this, why Toronto is such a vibrant run community.
Yeah, and we're not just saying that, because I've always believed that even when you did pull a crew together, you did check all the boxes, like what it looks like, and even maintaining people's well-being just in the, when you're in the club itself. But I could see visually that there's a crew there. Anyone could start a crew, as Jonathan said earlier, but when you add these other things around it, that makes it like a more fun thing, and this is one of the reasons why JG and I started a podcast, was to even give a platform or a voice or show that there are crews that maybe are people living out east that didn't know that the Rogue Runners are about inclusivity, but now they should be able to, if they listen to a podcast, but just the idea of being able to utilize and garner this space to show that there are more than what we see on Instagram, as an example, but a different format. We could have long conversations because we might have brushed shoulders on the run, but we never had a conversation like this. So that's part of why Jonathan and I just wanted to get in. And then, as you said, Daniel, there's people in the community that are running and doing things that I never get to hang out with them. But yeah, so here it is. You'll be able to hear about people. And then people get to know who you are as an individual and then as a human being. And then the end result is how you express about the actual club itself.
Yeah, the one thing I would love to add that is, we appreciate the, how much you guys love us and that we appreciate that, those compliments. But I think it really comes down to our members. Like, the five of us, we had started this, but our members are what make this club what it is. And like the group of people that we work with are so incredible. I've never seen a group of people, we do Wednesday and Friday workouts in the park. I've never seen a group of people so willing to, we joke and call it dying in Hyde Park on Friday nights. Jonathan's been to some of those practices where, people are killing themselves in these workouts. And regardless of your pace, people are hanging around till the end, giving high fives. And then the majority of the group is heading over to a local pub for, a beer and some food. Like, we have such a nice balance of really working hard and chasing goals, but also recognizing that these are really good relationships that people have developed. And I think that the people just make our club what it is. So I huge kudos to our runners. They're an awesome group of people and really are the reason that they're carrying out our vision here. They're the ones that get, amped up to do these community things. They're the ones that are out cheering at these races. They're the ones that are visible in the community. So yeah, we would not be who we are without the amazing people that we've recruited. And so recruited, that was the one word I said I wasn't going to use. The people that we've attracted, not recruited. I take it back.
So Megan, first of all, that was really well said. And I agree so much with that, because you can have this vision for run crew and this concept of what you want to do, and then you can have your executive team and kind of what you're thinking, but if people don't believe in the vision or the mission statement, or they don't feel like you're living the values, they won't run with you, they won't participate, they won't be part of your group. And that's not what's happening here. You have a throng of people that are showing up each Wednesday, Friday, and when's your long run, Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
So just showing up numbers, masses to come run with you because of what you've created. So yeah, it is definitely about the runners. It's also about just believing in the vision. Megan, Danielle, Thank you so, so much. Please thank Eve and Colin and Gianna for kind of all the work that they're doing to make this run crew so absolutely incredible. Hopefully when we can get together, Dre and I would love to come out and run with you all one day. I might still even in my drawer here have my Rogue shirt. So
it's like
if I'm allowed to, if I didn't gain that much weight. The pandemic's only 14 months.
Right.
But but hopefully we can join you for a run one day. We would love to feel the energy and the vibe of what Rogue Runners has to offer. And just exciting thinking about it. But thank you for telling us about Rogue Runners, about yourselves, and sharing kind of your vision with us. And we can't wait to see those singlets out there again, crushing it. Because we didn't even mention it, but the signs.
It's so funny.
The Kill the Hill signs. Yeah,
tell you,
the spring runoff signs are incredible.
Organized.
So we can't wait to see those signs. It's beautiful. So we can't wait to see that out there. But thank you for being our guest, and thank you so much for everything you shared. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, this was fun.
With that being said, this is Longest Stride Podcast. Peace.
Peace.